Hello, Baker McKenzie welcomes you to Connect on Tech, a global podcast series covering legal developments on data, technology, privacy, and security that impact your business. Here's your host, Brian Hengisbaugh, Global Chair of Privacy and Security.
Hello, and welcome back to Connect on Tech. I'm Brian Hengisbaugh, Global Chair of Privacy and Security at Baker McKenzie. So delighted today to have Cyrus Vance with us. Cyrus is our Global Chair of Cybersecurity. And in his previous life, before joining the firm, he ran a 75-person cyber shop when he served three consecutive four-year terms as Manhattan District Attorney. Great person, great attorney, great cyber expert. Cyrus, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be with you again.
So this is going to be the first of a two-part series that we are doing, where part one is going to be looking broadly at cybercrime and trends and dealing with criminals and risks. And then in part two, which is going to come a little bit later, we're going to take a closer look at the national cybersecurity strategy, what that is and what some of the big takeaways are. So maybe to kick off this part one, Cyrus, give us a sense, you know, why is it so hard, or why does it seem so hard to combat cybercrime and hold criminals accountable?
It really is a fascinating point in time to be involved in helping companies and countries and communities become more cyber resilient. And I think progress is being made. But to answer your question, Brian, I think there's several factors about what makes it so hard to deal with cybercrime. First and foremost, it's scary. The vast majority of attacks that are using the internet are occurring at the state and local level to medium and small-sized businesses and individuals, seniors, members of disadvantaged communities economically. These are people who are, you know, whose credit cards, whose identities and the like are being attacked by criminals for profit. And America really doesn't have a great base of knowledge at the local level on, you know, how to protect itself. As individuals, I think most of us don't really understand fully the risks of cyber in our lives. We don't feel competent to investigate, and we don't really know what to do. So I think there's I think as a country, we're not particularly educated, and therefore, I think it makes it more difficult to establish policy and to achieve the kind of resiliency that ultimately I think the country hopes to achieve. Secondly, the criminals who are committing these acts are very hard to catch. Obviously, there is a high degree of anonymity involved in the cyber attack on whether it's a business or an individual or a family company. So there is anonymity, even if the criminals are doing it in your city. But many cyber criminals obviously are attacking businesses and communities and individuals in other states or in other countries. So it is very hard, even if you identify who's actually at the keyboard and who is committing the cyber offense, it's hard to develop the evidence, which often resides in far-flung places and far-flung countries, develop the evidence sufficient to put a case together for prosecutors or regulators. And even if you put a case together, they may live in a country which does not have any agreement with the United States to have those individuals appear if, in fact, they are indicted in the United States. So there's a lot of factors around cyber, knowledge, distance, secrecy, that make it hard to defend.
Great points. To what extent do you feel like the global crime fighting partners around the world are actually getting better at this? In other words, in fact, I'm going to tease out. I recall you telling a story about a criminal who happened to be in Spain, I think it was, on the beach, and somehow he took a photo of his feet or something like that. But talk to us a little bit about Is that getting better with multi-jurisdictional cooperation, and what does that look like?
I absolutely believe that governments, both between states in the United States and between countries, the United States and other global countries or global players, understand how important it is for there to be partnerships and actual real-time working relationships between law enforcement of many countries or regulators from very many countries. When I was the Manhattan District Attorney starting in about 2015, I knew that to defend Manhattan, it was not about just looking how to prevent crime within the, you know, within the bounds of Manhattan, on one side the Hudson River, on the other side the East River. Our defensive perimeter to prevent cyber attacks from coming to Manhattan were in Asia or in Europe or in Latin and South America. And so I reached out and built partnerships with French prosecutors, the City of London Police, the Singapore Attorney General's Office, and other countries, because I knew that similarly situated big cities and their prosecutors were having the same challenges I was, the same criminals were attacking our cities, and it was necessary and very useful for me to share intelligence, to share the fruits of investigations with fellow law enforcement globally, and they reciprocated to me. So it's important, Brian, because the defensive perimeters have entirely shifted. And when the criminals that are attacking New York are behind a, have a server farm in Eastern Europe, it's important for America to have relationships with governments in Europe and Eastern Europe to try to establish common norms of what is, of what the approach to cybercrime will be, and how we will support each other with the appropriate safeguards, so that governments are working together in the right way and not the wrong way. You can't fight a global challenge like cybercrime without having global partnerships that work.
Do you think the situation is becoming more difficult given the situation in Russia with the invasion of Ukraine, given the increase in the strained relationships with China? Is it that we might be entering into a new phase where the cyber criminals are even more insulated because they are sort of, for lack of a better term, behind enemy lines and difficult to get to? Is that your perception of where we might be going?
I think that is my perception, and I think it's a perception shared by folks, you know, with much broader responsibilities than myself. I mean, if you look at the four major players around global cyber attacks, China, North Korea, Russia, and Iran, I mean, those relationships aren't getting any better with the United States. And while Russia may be a member of Interpol, the geopolitical challenges with having Russia and the United States and Interpol working together become more complicated. So I do think that that countries who are geopolitically disaligned with the United States are less interested in trying to solve identify and prosecute cyber criminals from those countries. I think that's just a fact, and that has not been getting better. It's been getting worse.
Perfect. And then, of course, the corresponding lesson or point that companies need to understand is, and boards need to understand, is from a resourcing perspective, we're probably going into a phase where the threat is spiking up, but not just because of things like ransomware as a service, where many more bad actors can get involved and attack companies, but also the threat actors will have plenty of time and resource to be uninterrupted in making attacks, might even be fueled or funded by government authorities, right, to disrupt commerce or other activities. So from a board and a company perspective, it's a real signal, an important time to invest even more in the cybersecurity defenses, knowing that, you know, nothing's going to be perfect, but there's probably going to be more, even more, that's needed going forward. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. The attacks are increasingly sophisticated. The objects of those attacks are absolutely on American government agencies, American businesses, from manufacturing to health and hospitals to critical infrastructure across the board. So I think cyber risk is a code red issue for businesses and governments and entities that are considered critical infrastructure in the United States. And the federal government has stepped up its efforts enormously in the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years through the work of CISA and FBI and DHS and so many other federal players. They're doing such a better job of trying to coordinate information sharing to companies and states and cities around the country to help them understand what they need to do to protect themselves. So that is moving in the right direction. But because America is such a big country, because we have a system of government where states operate on their own and the federal government is a separate entity, it's much harder to have a coordinated strategy to protect America because of the size and nature of our governments. But that's, unfortunately for corporations, that's the, you know, that's not an, that doesn't really matter. The safest thing I think corporations can do to save money in the future is to invest money today to test and make sure they are as resilient from cyber attack as they can reasonably be. And that, I think, is, you know, that is the calling to board members for public companies, is that they, in their capacities, fiduciaries, have to make sure that their stewardship of data and other valuable information for their customers is protected, and therefore the share value and the reputation of the company is protected.
Perfect. Okay, we will leave it there for part one. Thank you so much, Cyrus Vance, for being here. We look forward to everybody joining us for part two. We're going to be looking at the National Cybersecurity Strategy.
Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for our next podcast when we connect on tech. For more information on data and technology, subscribe to our blog at connectontech.com or visit our website at bakermckenzie.com.